Welcome to the Pure Flicks Podcast, a show brought to you by PureFlicks.com. PureFlicks.com, the faith, family, and fun video streaming service. Get ready for uplifting news, scripture, movie reviews, and interviews with some of your favorite actors, authors, and pastors. Let's get started.
Welcome to the Pure Flicks Podcast. I am Billy Hollowell, and we are heading into Mother's Day weekend. And so we're going to talk a little bit about that today, but we've actually got two guests on the show who have some great stories to share with us. But before we get there, I just wanted to dive in. We've got some great content over on the blog, and a lot of this content is addressing the COVID crisis, where we are right now, the chaos, the fear. I think if we're being honest, a lot of people out there, you might be listening and you're like, I'm not afraid of COVID. I'm not worried about COVID. Maybe you're in the camp of, you know, struggle right now because you've lost a job or a friend or a loved one has lost a job, or you're watching people who are struggling, not because of COVID necessarily in terms of health conditions, but because of the fallout. So a lot of us, we're on all different planes. Some of us are anxious and we are afraid. And this is something that has really created a lot of uncertainty. And so we've got a lot of great content over at insider.pureflix.com that you can read. And one of the things I've been trying to do is just reflect on what we can learn during this time, right? Because at the end of the day, a lot of us, I know a lot of the country is reopening right now, different pockets. I'm in New York, just outside of New York City. We are not reopening. We are nowhere near, I would assume, reopening because we've been kind of the epicenter of this whole thing. And so, you know, I'm watching the country reopen, but there's a lot of cautiousness and fear even with that. And so I've just been thinking through, what can I learn, right? Like, what are the things I can take away from this circumstance of being in the house for 2 months now, pretty much, outside of some brief times during the day, going for walks and things like that? What can I take away? And so I've got a piece up on PureFlix Insider that I think is helpful. And I just wanted to share a couple of those lessons. And they're just things for us to reflect on. I struggle personally with patience. And yet, one of the lessons I feel coming out of this is that patience is key. You know, that no matter what happens, we need to be able to have the self-control and the peace to have patience. And so I think that's an important lesson. Another lesson is that really, at the end of the day, what we think matters sometimes isn't what really matters, right? A lot of us have come to the realization, and maybe we were there before, but this has maybe brought us to remember that it's our family, it's our friends, it's real life that matters, you know, not to put our identity in jobs and positions and the things we're doing, but to really put our effort and all of our, you know, care into what really matters. The third lesson is gratitude, right? That we should be grateful. I think I've spent a lot of time frustrated during this quarantine because we've had a kitchen renovation that's been paused. You know, these are just silly problems when you think about the fact that there are people who don't have kitchens in places throughout the world. And so remembering to have gratitude. I've been telling my kids, you know, listen, you can't get out, you can't see friends, it's hard. And as much as they can understand at their young ages of 7 and 4, I've said, we've got to be grateful for what we do have, right? We have so much. And so having gratitude and also forgiveness, I think it's a great time to focus on the fact that at the end of the day, we've got to forgive. No matter what has happened, no matter what someone has done to us, forgiveness is not about doing something for someone else, right? That's part of it. It's a small part of it. It's really more about what we do for ourselves, not being controlled by the hatred and the anger. And I think having the time to focus on all of these things during COVID, we remember that life is really short. And so I expand on all of those lessons in a blog post over at insider.pureflix.com. The title of that blog post is 4 Truths We're All Discovering During Quarantine. And I wanted to just also, you know, let you guys know there is a great new series over on pureflix.com. It's called Finding Love in Quarantine. And the main character, Rick, you will really be able to, those of you who have been sheltered in place, I think relate to Rick and what he's going through in this series. The first episode is out right now on PureFlix.com. If you're not currently a member, you can grab a free trial over at PureFlix.com and test drive the service. We've got thousands of TV shows and movies that you can check out right now, including the new Finding Love in Quarantine. Now, having said that, I want to dive into one of our first interviews today. We've got two people coming on the show, and this is actually a pastor. His name is Derwin Gray, who I've known for a while. I've interviewed him a number of times in the past, and Derwin actually is a former NFL player, and so he's got this incredible story, and a story that I think a lot of us can really relate to. He's got a new book out called The Good Life, What Jesus Teaches About Finding True Happiness. I think a lot of us, we want true happiness, right? All of us do. That's part of the human condition. And yet we struggle. We struggle to find it. And so Derwin's got this amazing story of being in the NFL, of having money and fame and notoriety in sports, and yet still having those struggles of trying to find happiness. Now he has gone on to become a pastor of a massive church. And with no further ado, let's just bring him on the podcast right now. Hey, how's it going today?
It's going good. How are you doing?
I'm good. You know, just navigating the new normals that we're all in, right? I mean, it's like it's been a strange but a really interesting time of kind of, I don't know, I think, and I'd love to hear your thoughts on this, but sort of refocusing on faith, on life, on what really matters. That's been kind of my experience in the midst of this.
Yeah. I think we all went through a time of disbelief, and then a time of shock, and then a time of grief. And then it was like, okay, so how do we adapt? Now, particularly for people who are underinsured, who have lost their jobs, people that are poor, the way COVID has attacked them is much different than probably people like you and I. You know, like the idea of social distancing is not possible in a lot of places. The idea of washing your hands with soap in places where that's not available. And so part of me is like, man, I'm so thankful that we're doing great. But the other part of me is like, but there are so many people that are not doing great. So how can I leverage my life in Jesus so that those on the margins, those who are poor, those who are adversely affected, can be touched by Christ to bring a glimpse of heaven to earth so that they can experience his comfort and his care as well?
Yeah, that's so important. And I think it's so easy to forget, and it's terrible to say, to forget about those people, right? If you're not seeing it right in front of your face, and when we get caught in our own, because I mentioned, you know, it's been refining. And part of that, admittedly, is the complaints that I've had about things where I'm like, oh, trying to balance homeschooling with working now and do, you know, and you catch yourself and you say, oh my goodness, thank God I have a job, and I have, you know, thank God that right, you know, trying to think about the things that I have when there's so many people who, and I was talking with somebody who's actively out in New York City working to find the homeless, and he's like, listen, everybody's sheltering in and sheltering in place, and we're going out there because we know these people, they're very visible now. You know, we look past them when the city's busy and people are running around, but now these people are out there and the homeless really need help. I mean, they're among the most vulnerable with immune systems and all that. And so it just opens your eyes to the fact that there's a whole world outside there that's hurting, and a lot of us have been so distracted with things that maybe don't matter so much, right? And so it's a little reboot, I think, and what you just said is so, so important. It really is. So I appreciate that.
Well, and the thing is like proximity breeds intimacy. And so I grew up poor. I grew up on welfare. I grew up in that type of a context. And so therefore, there's always this hyper awareness. And I think that's one of the reasons why I connected with Jesus, is that he was always among the people on the margins, whether if they were immorally on the margins, whether if they were poor, whether if they were sick, he was a healer in the midst. And so I do agree secondarily that it is totally a reset, because it's almost like, particularly for American Christians, it's almost like we sprinkle Jesus pixie dust on top of our dreams and our will being done. And what COVID did, it was like, we were building sandcastles, and this wave of COVID came in and knocked it down. Mm. And then we actually began to see the idols that we've been worshiping and following instead of following Christ. And so what I've tried to do in The Good Life is I have tried to help people see and hear from Jesus afresh so that they can build their lives not on sand, but on the rock, because he invites us into the good life. He invites us into authentic happiness.
And I want to talk, I want to get into the book, which we'll do in a moment here. Obviously, it's called The Good Life. And I love the subtitle, What Jesus Teaches About Finding True Happiness, because that is the thing. We're all searching for happiness. And you mentioned that pixie dust. And I have been so guilty of that in my life until the last couple of years. I finally have said every day, okay, God, where do you want me this morning? Who do you want me to talk to? What do you want me to do? I mean, I wasn't doing that. For most of my life, I've just kind of been like, I'm going to do my own. This is what I want. And I'm going to say, okay, God, what do you think about that later on, once I get what I want? And so I want to talk about that. But you mentioned your upbringing a little bit. And obviously, you've got a really interesting resume. I mean, I'm fascinated by your resume. Having been in the NFL, having played football, and then finding yourself in ministry as a pastor. So I wanted to kind of go back to those early years. You know, what was it first that led you into the NFL? I'm just curious.
You know, that is a great question. So I grew up in San Antonio, Texas, and Texas football is taken very seriously. Elite coaching. Ever since I was a little boy, I wanted to be a football player. The problem was in middle school and the beginning of high school, I was small and slow and not very good. Other than that, I was on my way to the NFL. but there's this wonderful thing called testosterone, and you begin to mature and grow. And the high school that I went to called Converse Judson is one of the preeminent high schools in the state of Texas, even today, with just a world-class coaching staff. And they taught me how to work. So as I matured and learned how to work, football for me became my way out, because I grew up poor, grew up on welfare, violence, drug abuse, mental health abuse. I mean, it was the things that I experienced no child should experience, the things that I saw no child or no person should see. But it was normal. Like, the dysfunction and the toxic environment was absolutely normal. So for me, football was my way out. I loved it, but it was more than just a game. It was my way out. And so I was the first one in my family to go to college. So I got a football scholarship to Brigham Young, and I went to BYU. Now, keep in mind, at this time, I was not, if you had asked me, are you a Christian? I would have said, well, yeah. But I wouldn't have known what that meant. Football was my God. I was my own God. And so at BYU, I played great. I ended up leaving there as one of the greatest players to ever play there. Met my wife my freshman year. We've been together ever since. And I got to the NFL, and my first year was just miserable. I was like, oh, my gosh, I've worked this hard for this long, and this is miserable. I didn't have very many friends on the team. I didn't connect with a lot of the guys. I wasn't playing very much. I thought the money that I was sending home to Texas would help my family. It only made things worse. It was never enough. And then by my third year in the NFL, I was a team captain. I was playing well, but yet I couldn't forgive my father, who was never involved in my life. I couldn't forgive myself for the things that I had done. I didn't know how to love my wife because I didn't know how to love myself. Mm-hmm. I started experiencing injuries, and it hit me like there's got to be more to life than this. It was like I was chasing shadows. And the minute you get close to catching happiness, it just runs away. And so I had a teammate with the Colts for 5 years, from 1993 to 1997. Who every day after practice, he'd take a shower, dry off, wrap a towel around his waist, and he would share Christ. His nickname was the Naked Preacher. And he would walk around the locker room and he would share Christ. And after 5 years of watching his life and listening to what he was saying, on August 2nd, 1997, in a small dorm room, I called my wife on the phone. I was in training camp. And on the outside, it looked like I had everything. But on the inside, I was empty. I was unhappy. I was broken, and I called her and I said, I want to be more committed to you. And then I said, I want to be committed to Jesus. And I literally felt a bodily change. Like I literally felt it. And I cried for 3 days at the thought of knowing that for the first time in my life, someone loved me, not because I earned it. Someone loved me, not because I performed well, but someone loved me in spite of everything that I'd ever done wrong. Mm. And they loved me as I was. And when Jesus got on the cross, he took my place. He gave me grace. And through his resurrection, like he gave me a new power and a new life. Like I felt it. And so, man, that moment changed everything. I developed the hunger to read. And everything I read about Christ, I would begin to share with my teammates, although I kept my clothes on when I did it. And so
you didn't want to be the sequel to the naked preacher. I get it. That's
great. Yeah. I wanted to be the clothed preacher. And so that was 1997, 1998. I signed a contract as a free agent to play for the Carolina Panthers. I play in 3 games. I tear my knee up. And so I can't play the rest of the year because I'm on what's called injured reserve. So basically what I did was rehab my knees, sit in the ice tub and read the Bible for hours. And the more I read the Bible, the more I fell in love with Jesus because he loved me. And the more I knew he loved me, the more I wanted to know him. And as I began to know him, my life was changed and I began to share with my teammates. And moving into the next season, my wife and I said, we're done with football. And our family and friends said, what are you going to do? We were like, I don't know. And so I got invited to speak at a youth event in South Carolina. And I told God, no. I said, God, I don't want to do this because I'm a compulsive stutterer. My whole life, I stuttered. And it was a hindrance. It was a source of pain. People made fun of me. And I just cried in the shower. And I said, God, I don't want to do this. I'll send money. Send somebody else who can really talk. And I didn't hear an audible voice, but I sense God saying this. If I can raise my son from the dead, I can raise your tongue to talk.
Wow.
Go and trust me. And I went and a bunch of kids came to Christ and the phone just started ringing off the hook. And before you knew it, we were in ministry, but I didn't know it.
Wow. So it wasn't even like an intentional. It was something that happened and you almost resisted it in the beginning, which is interesting. It's kind of like a little Moses moment there. But, you know, like I'm just not equipped to do it. And yet here you are and you're very equipped to do it. And that prayer is interesting to me because I think a lot of times and I always try to tell my 7-year-old this, there's going to be a lot of things you think you can't do. And as long as you know it's something God's pushing you to do and that you're supposed to do it, you will be able to do it no matter what. And that's a great lesson and testament to that, your story. Yeah.
You know, and I think we often think that the outcome is the blessing. Mm. Obedience is the blessing. Because there will be things that we try to do in God's name that won't be successful. And God is looking more at, were you obedient? Mm. And, you know, that's even to this day, you know, even with the good life, it's like, man, I want this book to be New York Times bestseller. I want the millions of people to be changed. And at the end of the day, it's, was I obedient to do what I believe God's called me to do? That's right. The blessing.
Yeah. And to the point of your story too, I mean, it's crazy. Like you go to the NFL, you've got money, you've got fame, you have these things happening. And like you said, on the outside, it looks like everything, you have everything you could ever want, but yet that's not the purpose for you was to be where you are now. Right. And so, but it's interesting because I think the world looks at success obviously in a very different way. And it's so hard for people. And I fall into this trap all the time. I have to bring myself back out of it to remember that, hey, getting, you know, a lot of people to buy your book or whatever it is, right? Getting on TV or doing whatever you want to do, those things, you know, they're great goals if they're aligned with what they're supposed to be aligned with. But when they're not, I mean, we see so many people in Hollywood and media and so many places who have great careers, but they're not happy. They haven't found, you know, the good life, right? And it's fascinating to me that's something we all, it doesn't have to be a famous person, we all struggle with that. So I guess kind of positioning and transitioning to the book a little bit here, what are you hoping that people take away from The Good Life when they read it?
Yeah. So let me give an illustration first. So I'm kind of into zombie movies, you know, like The Walking Dead and all that stuff. So don't judge me, people. But I think it's a really good illustration that a zombie is a dead person. And you can't enjoy what you're doing because you're dead on the inside. And I think a lot of times, even for followers of Jesus, the things that we're doing externally are more for our glory than his glory. And so being wealthy or famous in your job, all of those external things and accomplishments are windows for Jesus to express himself through. The job is not the end goal. It's the means for the end goal to take place. And so what I want people to understand is that Jesus created us to be happy, but it's not the happiness that we think. The happiness we think is good things are happening to us, but the happiness that God wants to give us is that he makes us good. That's the difference. Is God is more concerned with forming our character to reflect his. Happiness is not what we do. Happiness is who we allow God to make us become. And so when Jesus sits down in Matthew chapter 5, verses 3 through 12, he goes through 8 characteristics of a blessed person. The Greek word blessed that Jesus uses, for example, when he says, blessed are those who mourn, for they will be comforted. That word blessed in the Greek language is makaros. And that word makaros literally means happy. So happy are those who mourn, for they will be comforted. What in the world? Why would you be happy for mourning? Well, we're happy when we mourn because we join in solidarity with Jesus, who experienced our pain, the brokenness of the world on the cross. We're happy when we mourn because we experience solidarity with people who are hurting. But we're happy when we mourn because we know that a new day is coming where there's no more pain, there's no more tears, there's no more brokenness, there's no more sadness. But until that day, we actually join Jesus and being hope dealers, life givers. And so the happiness is who we're becoming. And even for followers of Christ, you know, I've been pastoring for a while. I've been discipling for a while. I've been counseling for a while. And the majority of Christians view happiness the way non-Christians view happiness. And so as I wrote As I wrote The Good Life, it was out of response back in 2015 to counseling so many Christians who were unhappy. And I'm like, oh my gosh, in Matthew chapter 5, Jesus opens the greatest sermon ever preached, the Sermon on the Mount, with this is how I guarantee you can be happy. And so our happiness is rooted in something deeper, better, and more beautiful than what happens to us. And there are some unexpected blessings of living out of true happiness. It's like we become more concerned, not about what it looks like on the inside, but about the healthiness of us or not about what happens on the outside, but what happens on the inside. And so often our happiness is, okay, I got a new job, I'm happy. Well, what if that new job causes you to work more and you spend less time with your family? Is that a blessing?
Right. Yeah. You know? Yeah. Or what if your identity is in that job and you lose it, which is what, I mean, a lot of people right now, obviously struggling with unemployment, you know, and you've put all your eggs in that basket and it's suddenly done. What happens then?
Well, and you know, I played in the NFL back in the 90s, so I didn't make the kind of money that these guys make now. But yet and still, I did well, right, by average standards. But there was a time when I remember when the Indianapolis Colts general manager called me, and I had played with Indianapolis for 5 years. I was a 1994 RCA Man of the Year for community service. And they called me, and the conversation went like this: Derwin, the new general manager does not want to resign you. I wish you well. Goodbye. Click.
Wow.
That was it. That was it. And I remember calling my mentor and I told him what happened. And he said, praise the Lord. I said, no, they fired me. They don't want me. And he goes, I know. And I said, praise the Lord. I said, why praise the Lord? I got fired. He goes, because God has another opportunity for you. And little did I know he would bring me to Carolina. Little did I know I would tear my knee up. Little did I know that I would basically have a year to study the Bible. And little did I know that now in the Charlotte, North Carolina area, I would be pastoring one of the fastest growing churches in the country, an influential church, and pastoring thousands of people. For Easter, we had 117,000 people watch our message.
That's just crazy. That's crazy.
That is absolutely bananas.
And they're saying that you might have a 20 there. I just saw a study this morning. There might be a 25% increase in church attendance in some congregations because of what you just said, that people are in the midst of this, you know, finding truth, which is amazing. And I hope that happens.
Yeah. I would not doubt if we don't see more than that, because our giving has gone up. The amount of people watching. I really do think that in God's providence, I don't believe he caused COVID. COVID is a result of us living in a broken world. It's not yet heaven, but God is an opportunist, and he's used this opportunity for people to really, like you said at the beginning of our conversation, to have a divine reset. Like, okay, am I chasing after all these things and I'm still not happy and I'm not following Christ? Maybe I should give Jesus a chance. And I could not, and I'm speaking to Christians, I could not have predicted how opportune of a time it is to have this book come to the world at this time, The Good Life. Like our lives have just been shattered and tattered. Our rhythms are out of sync. Like people are hungering, and who better to learn from than Jesus? So my doctoral work is in what's called first century, Second Temple Jewish understanding. So it's like I weave the story of Jesus in his own terms, in his own world, and invite people into that world so we could have the capacity to live in a 21st century world.
Well, and it's, I mean, when you look at where we are, and to the points you just made, your book is really coming at the best time, because I think we're all looking for that happiness, and everybody always is looking for happiness. But I think we've been so distracted with cell phones and iPads, and go down the line. I mean, I'm attached to a device all the time. It's the nature of what I do. But I feel like we've lost ourselves. And at the same time, you have culture telling you a lot of lies. There are a lot of lies. You know, look within yourself for the truth. And, you know, I wrote a book about this a few years ago, the concern of kind of looking inward to find the answers to everything, when really that's not where we should be looking. And it's really been, I think, this rubber band ball that is kind of bursting now, and everybody's having this chance to say, okay, what do I really believe, right? And not only do we have a crisis where we're isolated and we're with our families in our house, or some people are alone in their houses, but we have a crisis where people are losing their lives and getting sick. And so it is this perfect storm of events that, and I love what you said too about God not causing it, that it's a result of our world, but that he's reaching people through this. And I think it's been amazing to see that. And I think your book, The Good Life, really speaks to that, and offers a tool to help people figure out and point back to what does it really mean to have a good life? And so I'm excited for this. Now, when is the release date for the book?
So the release date for the book is June 2nd, but I want to encourage your listening audience to pre-order now. And also, my friends at Lifeway is selling The Good Life. Listen to this. This is bananas. They're selling my new book at a 50% discount. You can get two for the price of one, four for the price of two. I mean, it is absolutely bananas. So you can order The Good Life at Lifeway at a 50% discount. So, Father's Day is coming up. I wrote this book to connect with men and women, young people and old people, people in between, millennials, Gen Z. And the reason why is because that's the way our congregation is. It's a multi-ethnic, multi-generational, social, economically diverse congregation. And that's who I'm writing to. And so, yeah, man, get the Good Life at a 50% discount.
That's
at
crazy.
Lifeway.
That's crazy. That's but awesome. Yeah, usually everyone's like, go to Amazon. It's like, no, go to Lifeway right now and get, because that's huge. And I'm super excited. Where can people go to if obviously you're super compelling, you've got a great story. If they want to read more about you, learn more about your church, where can they go to find more info?
Yeah, they can go to thegoodlifebook.net, thegoodlifebook.net. And then after that, they can go to transformationchurch.tc. transformationchurch.tc.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much for coming on the podcast today. Really appreciate it.
Well, thank you for having me. And you guys be safe up in the NYC.
Thanks so much.
Did you know you can access thousands of entertaining and inspiring faith and family-friendly TV shows, movies, and original series? It's simple. Just log on to PureFlix.com right now to start your free trial. From kids' content to some of the most uplifting films, we've got your entire family covered. Sign up today.
Hey, and welcome back to the PureFlix podcast. I'm Billy Hollowell, and that was Pastor Derwin Gray. If you're just popping into the podcast now for some reason and you didn't listen to that whole interview, make sure you go back and listen, because he had so much to tell us about faith, about happiness. I think these are the issues that plague us, right? We are on this age-old struggle to get from our birth to happiness, right? And I think a lot of us forget that finding happiness has a lot to do, and actually everything to do, with finding what God's purpose is for our lives. And so it was great to hear him talk about that. Make sure you pick up his book, The Good Life. And I want to transition into another topic, and it's related to some of what we've been talking about. And this is really, you know, not only just happiness, but I think dealing with the fallout of coronavirus and how it's made us feel, the struggles some of us have gone through in the midst of this, and some of us are still feeling these struggles pretty intensely. We're going to have a guy named Kenny Luck on the show. He's a pastor, he's an author, and he's the founder of an organization called Every Man Ministries. He's currently working on a series called The Corona Chronicles, and he actually looks at the pandemic and he breaks down how God has really been there for us and is there for us through the entire thing. He provides some great perspective and encouragement throughout that series. And so we wanted to have him on today to talk not only about his series, but about men's ministry and what it really means to work with guys, right? And do that in an innovative way. We talk a lot about women's ministry. I think sometimes we don't talk as much about men's ministry. So Kenny's got a lot to share with us about that series and about how we can grow in a relationship with God in the midst of chaos. And so with no further ado, I want to welcome Kenny to the show right now. Hey, Kenny, how's it going today?
So good, Billy. Thanks for having me on.
Well, thanks for coming on. I know you're always doing innovative things in ministry, and you're a men's pastor, you're an author, you're also the founder of Every Man Ministries. And so before we get into coronavirus and what you're doing in response to that, tell us a little bit about Every Man Ministries.
Yeah, I started it in 2000, and it's based on a simple premise that one transformed man can transform a lot of things. You know, I think our listeners know that a lot of the injustices that we see, whether it's sex trafficking or domestic violence or the orphan epidemic, a lot of the things that we see that cause us so much pain, there's broken male culture at the root of it. And so God called me to start Every Man to share a message of hope with men, to hopefully change their worldview, their identity, start making new choices. And when men do that, people are blessed, people are helped, people are encouraged, whether that's people in our community or women or children. So Every Man Ministries exists to kind of foster a movement of faith-based men that make new choices and are for others. So we've been doing that for 20 years. It's been a great ride, and we're reaching hundreds of thousands of guys every week. It's been just an awesome adventure.
you know, it's something that's so needed too, because culture is so confusing and the messages are so conflicting,
yeah,
and the pressures, and I think just what's expected or what we assume is expected, especially for men. There's a lot of, it's interesting, there's so many women's ministries out there, and I know there are ministries, yeah, like yours, but I feel like we don't hear about them as much. Or do you,
yes,
think am I wrong? I don't know. That's just been
No, you're totally right. It's so interesting that you said that, because we're working on a worship album for men, and that's uniquely kind of directed at their ethos, and was talking with Joel Houston of Hillsong, and we said, hey, dude, you've got the Colors album for women, and you've got a Colors conference, and you've got all this stuff, but where's your stuff for the men? And he goes, you got a point there, mate. and so we've got Joel Houston, and we've got Derek Johnson and Chris Kilala and some other amazing artists. And they go, man, you know what? You're right. But no. So that's to affirm your point that you don't see it a lot, because there's this mentality of like, well, why do we need to help them?
Right.
You know, they're the cause. Culturally, it's sort of like we're the failed brand. And wow, don't give a man power, influence, or strength, because he'll just abuse it. Let's focus on the victims of their choices. And that's good and needed. That's the justice movement we see all around the world. But if you really want solution, you got to go to the root cause. And that's the heart, character, and conduct of men. So fortunately have seen in this corona COVID season, an increase in our audience of men. And I'm seeing a little bit of a turn because of some of those issues and with this episode going on right now.
Yeah, no, and I think that's so, so important. And there's so many other issues that are happening too. I mean, I was talking with Josh McDowell the other day, yeah, and he was bringing up, you know, the fact that porn addiction and so many other issues, in, yeah, light of what is happening, yep, with coronavirus, is, yep, actually going, yep, through the roof. Loneliness, obviously, these things we know that are happening. And so there's a real need to address and to have community. Like, we were built as people to be in community, and whether you're a man or a woman, that's just reality, to be able to communicate. And so finding a place where you can go to get those resources,
yes,
is important, right?
Yeah. And, you know, one last thing on just culture, men in this time in history, you know, there's a real attack on male strength too. And that exacerbates the loneliness. It's kind of like, if you're the failed brand, if you're emotionally immature, you can't be trusted in relationships, and you're making bad decisions with your influence, that's the public perception. It's a generalization, but it's reinforced in the media. Then that isolates you. And then that, when you feel bad, you want to feel good, thus the porn stuff. But then you add COVID to that, which accentuates the loneliness. And it's not about strength. It's, do you have character and compassion to guide your strength when it comes to choices and decisions? And what I've found recently in these last several weeks is that men really need, and I'm just going to use a word because I'm grabbing it out of the air, a prophetic voice to say, hey, you know what? This is happening and these things are happening, but guess what? There's a way to be and a believe and behave in the midst of this that satisfies your ethos and your gender and your expression, and it's hitting a nerve.
Absolutely, absolutely. Now, let's talk about your response to coronavirus, right? Because you are doing this series called The Corona Chronicles, so tell us about that.
Yeah, California, just by base where I'm sitting right now as I talk to you, we hit it hard and fast, and when that happened, when the circumstances kind of imposed themselves on me, I called my producer and I just said, hey, let's do a global live stream. Men are going to be at home by the millions. Let's do a series called The Corona Chronicles. And, you know, the Bible, you know, I thought about it. There's letters from quarantine in the Bible. You know, they're called the prison epistles. and the Apostle Paul, what's so great is that you've got people separated, but people speaking into each other's lives in the midst of being separated and quarantined, either from each other or in a cell. And it has been so powerful. The theme verse for it is pretty cool. It says, whatever happens, let us conduct ourselves in a manner worthy of the gospel. So whether we see each other or not, we're standing firm in the spirit, striving together as one, and for faith in the gospel. And I thought, that's so cool that in the craziness, in the whatever happens, we can conduct ourselves in a way where we experience God. There's a new togetherness. There's a new faithfulness. And while our circumstances might be disrupted, God's plan's not. And I think that general message of, hey, this circumstance possesses your body, but it doesn't possess you. And it might define a lot of external things, but it doesn't have to define you. It can affect temporary things, but not eternal things. And that God's plan is right now, in the midst of it, is a prophetic and welcomed message right now as people are confused and in sort of a malaise.
Yeah, I mean, and what would you say? Because I think a lot of people right now are struggling to find that joy, right? Because let's be, if you have kids, you're homeschooling them, there's a lot of crying going on, chaos, fun as well. This is not all negative. It's a lot of it's great. But you're trying to do your job, all those things are going on. You're stuck in the house at a time when it's warming up outside. How do you find joy at a time when there's so much uncertainty and isolation?
Really super good question. And it goes to your view of God. Like, is God loving right now? Is he sovereign right now? Is he in charge right now? And in the midst of adversity, and that has been a real challenge for people of faith around the world. Is God present only in my prosperity and when things are going great? But is he also present, and is there the fruit of the Spirit, joy, in the midst of adversity? And that was one of the main messages of the Corona Chronicles, was, hey, look, the crucifixion of Christ was, for the people watching, nobody's plan, okay? They looked at that and they went, wow, really? And that's not good, and how can anything good come out of this? But was God present? Was God working out a redemptive plan? Was he securing our salvation? Absolutely. And so what's cool about this, Billy, is for people who are followers of Christ, as this is happening, when they look at the gospel itself, they go, wow, God was really present in that. God was working in that. And it calls us back to, hey, God's not only present in my prosperity and blessing, but he's even more present in my adversity. And knowing that he's present and working works its way to your insides, and it makes you curious and inspired and expectant, like, okay, there's a new plan going on. Who's in front of me? My family. Who's in front of me? My wife. Who's in front of me? My kids. I'm saying hello to my neighbor over the fence. And there's all of these new opportunities in the midst of adversity. And that's kind of been the message of the Corona Chronicles, has been, hey, yeah, this is a new reality circumstantially, but this disruption is leading the people of God to some new connections, some new destinations that accomplish God's purpose.
So let me ask you this. Now, if somebody wants to dive in to this series, where do they go to do that?
So easy. Just go to the homepage at everymanministries.com, and you'll see in the carousel, big fat photo called the Corona Chronicles. And just, it says, click here to watch. And you can digest, one, any one of the 7 episodes so far. And my encouragement, and what the exciting thing is people are watching it, and then there's downloadable notes. And on the notes, there's discussion questions. So what I'm seeing happen with hundreds of thousands of guys is they'll watch it, and then they'll have a Zoom call after, or they'll do a FaceTime call with somebody. And that's my encouragement to your listeners too. You get the most out of it when you process it together.
I love that. I love that. In community, right? Being with other
Amen.
People.
Amen. Absolutely.
Well, I appreciate you taking the time today to come on and talk about this. We will make sure we direct people over there as well. And what else can people find? Because we talked a little bit about the ministry, just as a final question here at the beginning. Yeah. But what are some of the other resources you guys have over at Everyman Ministries?
Yeah, if you're an individual, we've just got a treasure chest full of things for men. So if you're a dude and you're listening, there's devotionals, blogs, there's a daily devotional that comes to your email, there's a Bible study series. And if you're a men's group, There's all sorts of curriculum there for you. If you're a church, there's strategies to help you build strong communities of men. So it's kind of like the treasure chest for all things men and faith.
Awesome. Well, listen, thanks so much for your time today. Appreciate you coming on.
Yeah, you got it, Billy. Thanks so much.
That was Kenny Luck, and always enjoy talking with Kenny. But as we end the show here, I wanted to just take a moment and honor moms. And we've got some great blog posts over at insider.pureflix.com where we talk about motherhood. And I want to just pinpoint one of those pieces because I think this is incredibly helpful. As we move into the weekend and we celebrate moms around the country, around the world, the amazing, essential role that these women play in shaping all of us, I want to point you to a piece on the PureFlix Insider blog that is titled 9 Transformational Bible Verses to Inspire, Guide, and Celebrate Moms. So we've got a little collection of Bible verses there for all you moms out there. And hey, if you've got a mom who you want to inspire, just send that list to them. Send them that article. It will inspire them. And I'll share one of the verses because I love, love, love these verses. And that verse is 1 Corinthians 16:14. It's a very simple verse. It says, do everything in love. And we know that moms do that, right? Moms do everything in love for us. And so we've got 8 other Bible verses you can check out about motherhood and that surround motherhood. If you go to insider.pureflix.com and look for a piece titled 9 Transformational Bible Verses to Inspire, Guide, and Celebrate Moms. And that brings us to the end of today's PureFlix podcast. Thanks so much for tuning in. I always love the shows when we get to have more than one guest on talking about interesting things, things that can help us, right, in our walks with God, in our general lives. Life is complicated. It is chaotic. And to be able to sit down, tell people's stories, and then from your end, listen to people's stories is a really, really powerful thing. So thanks for tuning in. And make sure you head over to iTunes, head over to Anchor, head over to wherever it is you listen to podcasts, and please rate this podcast. That's the big takeaway I want to leave you with today. Let us know what you think. Are you enjoying the podcast? And if you want to go further than that, please head on over to our Facebook page, post a comment, let us know what you want to hear from this podcast. But please, please, please post a review and come back next week for another episode of the PureFlix podcast. I am Billy Hollowell, and thanks for joining us.
That's all for today's podcast. You can follow PureFlix on Facebook at facebook.com/PureFlix and on Twitter at PureFlix. And be sure to log on today to PureFlix.com for thousands of faith and family-friendly movies and TV shows. Thanks for listening to the PureFlix podcast.